Salam and welcome to the Logic of the Birds podcast. With me today to discuss the poetry of Saadi are Professor Fatima Keshavarz and Professor Cyrus Zargar. Professor Keshavarz, let's start out with you. Can you please tell us a little bit about your relationship to Saadi and his poetry? What got you into his poetry and, you know, what have you come to appreciate it about it over time?
Well, I grew up in a family that, you know, was in love with poetry and chess. And so, you know, I found poetry more exciting. So I got into poetry. And I think my father was a really a Saadi lover. He just was always reciting things from memory, which was very common for that generation. Yeah. But then it was really more than just hearing the poetry. It was integrated into our lives. For example, in Nowruz, we would visit Saadi or the garden where Saadi had his home and his khanqah, and then finally he was buried there. And, you know, we would go in the garden that was very beautiful. Before we go in, there was a line on the door, famous line of Saadi. And I remember that as years passed, I finally managed to read it. So the line says, "Zakhake Saadi Shiraz buye ishq ayad. Hazar sal pas az marg u garash buyi." From the dust in which Saadi is buried comes the scent of love. Even if you come to sense it, you know, 1,000 years after his death. You know, this buya eshq was something that, of course, in a young age, I was very curious about. Now, there's a river that went past. It's really a stream of water now that is known as Hoze Mahi, the fish pond. And there's so many fish in there that you hardly can see the water. So we would go there and drop breadcrumbs for the fish. And then when everything finished, what was famous about the Saadi's neighborhood is an ice creamery. So then we would go there and have ice cream. So for a long time, the buya eshq was this kind of glittering, silvery fish and ice cream and a beautiful garden. And, you know, so it was very much integrated into life. And then, of course, Saadi has a beautiful voice. He is many, many different people in one. And at different stages of my life, each one of them became more important. And then, you know, one of them would rise to the surface and so forth. So very much a part of my life.
Thank you for that beautiful introduction to your introduction to Saadi. Ice cream and fish and the scent of love and flowers. Cyrus, how about you? This kind of similar introduction to Saadi?
No, actually. So I didn't really grow up speaking much Persian. I couldn't really speak Persian. And I could understand here and there because my grandma moved to America when I was like, you know, like younger, very like a child. And so we would. And I certainly wasn't able to read or write in Persian up until college when I took my first class in Persian. You know, because I had heard some, it sort of came quickly to me. And I had already done Arabic. I had done a few years of Arabic, and so I was kind of bored with the Persian class. And I don't know if you know the Thaxton. Thaxton's, I think it's a red Persian book. There was a language like laboratory, and you could go and listen to like CDs, and the Thaxton had a CD, and one of the first stories was from, it was like the first chapter of the Gulistan, the rose garden, that Saadi's rose garden that was there, and it was a gentleman who would read it. And I would, instead of doing things for the class, I would just keep listening to that over and over, and I loved it. I got something because I was an English, you know, I was an English major, and I hadn't seen something like this before. The mixture of, you know, prose and poetry and the concision. It's very concisely told, the story. You know, it gets to the heart of the moral lesson quickly, and it paints a very vivid picture with few words. So I listened to it over and over again, and I just ended up memorizing it you know, Padshahiro. Yeah, just like the whole thing, you know, Jahan, e barodar, nemonad bekes. It was just all, and that's actually how I learned Persian. So after that, I found it pretty easy to kind of move on to things that were to classical Persian and then keep working. I mean, not easy, but I'm saying, you know, that was like the start. So that's what Sa'di has in my heart. He's, you know, I didn't realize it at that time, but I think a lot of people who learn Persian, like in South Asia, you know, Sa'di is the go-to reading because of the loveliness of his prose.
Yeah, no, that's what a great way to learn to read Persian. I remember, I forget if it was Arbery or Nicholson or something, he wrote his own little poem about Sa'di, and he said, Sa'di is where youth learns to read and where age reads to learn. Well, as you know, both of you kind of said, Sa'di contains worlds. He has all of these different voices and he speaks to us in different ways. And that seems somewhat connected to his life. He had a really colorful life, a little bit different from his fellow Shirazi Hafez, who barely left Shiraz. Sa'di seems to have traveled widely and done a lot, and these travels seem to have informed his work. So, Dr. Keshavarz, can you tell us a little bit about Sa'di's context and his life and, you know, how that helps us understand his poetry?
Yes, sure. And of course, please come in at any point and add things or, you know. Sa'di was born in 1210 in Shiraz. And it was a time of relative peace under Atabak Sa'd ibn Zengi. His father worked for that establishment. So he grew up knowing something about how the city was run, how, you know, the different complexities of the life around him. And then his father passed, and soon after that, he traveled to Baghdad and studied there at the Nizamiye and later on taught at the Nizamiye. And then he started this journey that people have described as 30 years. I'm not sure if we can really pin down and say it was exactly 30 years that he traveled, but he's very likely to have gone from the West to Africa and from the East to China. Wow. Or the borders there. And that's a vast stretch of you know, languages and cultures and traditions is very, very colorful. And we can see his love and his curiosity to learn about these things. In other words, you know, sometimes you're forced into travel. Mm-hmm. You know, there's danger. This happened all the time. There would be a war and pillage and all that, and you have to run away. But sometimes you travel with a lot of intention to take in the life outside. And I think Sa'di's was that kind of traveling. And, you know, as a result of it, I think he developed multiple voices. This voice is always strong, unapologetic, fairly clear, except for when he's directly talking to the beloved, when he becomes very humble and apologizes for smallness. But even then he says, you know, you broke my heart, you have to fix it yourself. I'm a golden vessel that doesn't get repaired with glue. So you have to fix it yourself. So he's aware of his self-worth. He's full of laughter, even when things are not so happy. And there's almost a suppressed laughter in everything that he says. And then it sometimes comes to the surface. He has a teaching voice, obviously, because he did teach, he did learn, he did travel as well. And that's a very clear, again, not condescending, not pretending that he knows the answer to everything, but very candid, you know, about what he thinks. And then what I think he really is, at least for me, is he is a lover par excellence. He's a lover. He's a lover of other human beings. He's a lover of gardens. He is a lover of the world. But Jahan Khurram az onam, ke Jahan Khurram az o, ashagam bar hame alam, ke hame alam az o. You know, I'm gladdened in the world because the world is gladdened by him, capital H, or her, capital H, whatever if gender isn't there. And I'm in love with the world because the world all comes from him. And then به غنیمت شمار دوست دم عیسی صبح تا دل مرده مگر زنده کنی چین دم از اوست. So cherish every morning breeze. It's the breath of Jesus, because that's the way you bring your heart to life. So in these two lines, he says he's in love with the entire world. Why is that the case? And what does it do for him to be so in love? So I think, you know, there's a lot more we can say about his life. When he comes back to Shiraz, Shiraz is fine still, but Atabak Sa'd ibn Zangi has died. His son Abu Bakr is in place. And things are not still that bad, but they get worse and worse as time goes by. And I think we can later talk about how he handles some of those situations. But that's basically, in a nutshell, the way I connect with them in different, multiple ways, depending on where I am, I'm sure, as opposed to where he is, because he's all of those things.
No, he sounds like a lovely traveling companion. So it sounds like exactly the kind of person you'd want to have with you on a trip, either personally or just with his words. Professor Zargar, anything you'd like to add with that to tell us a little bit about his life? Was he associated with Sufism and Sufi orders at the time when he came back to Shiraz? Was he a teacher? How did he make his living? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, he was associated for a while with Sheikh Shahabuddin Sohrawardi. So he has some affiliation. His poetry is not Sufi in the way that Maulana's is or Attar's is. It's much more, you know, that kind of blending of spiritual and erotic and themes that was, you know, in the language. But, you know, one thing I would add, a small thing, is that, you know, some Orientalist scholars have taken Sa'di to task for his ethics, describing them as Machiavellian, but if you really read, especially his prose compositions, especially the Gulistan, what you see, I think, is a ethics of survival. It's real life. It's realistic. It's not premised on ideals. It's premised on this is the best you can do in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at it in the context of Sa'di's life, it makes much more sense. I mean, he's living in very precarious times. You know, where he's from is governed very often by people who don't care about the governed. You know, they don't care about those they rule over. And at times it seems it's so unstable that he has to leave. He lives through the sack of Baghdad, of course. And you have to imagine how devastating that must have been. Can you really think about, is there a more crushing event than the sacking of the Abbasid Caliphate and all? I mean, it's a huge deal, right? And he lives through all of these. And then he travels and he, as Dr. Keshavar says, he sees a lot, he experiences a lot, and he brings all of that into his, you know, if you want to call it an ethics of survival, if you want to call it kind of, there's a pragmatism, but what I love was especially Dr. Keshavar saying that there's always love for other human beings behind it and devotion behind it, and that's what makes it beautiful. It's that you can weather the storm, you can live through the hardest of times and still be a human being, you know, and still maintain your dignity. That's what Sa'di will give you. And I think that's often what's misunderstood.
Yeah, I absolutely love what Dr. Zargar said. This side of Sa'di's personality is the most misunderstood. See, we have a lot of mystical poets who are not more mystical than Sa'di, but they have a mutinous voice. They want to break things open and tear things open and change everything. Well, he wants change, but he wants people to be aware of their limits. I mean, there's a story that only a couple of days ago, actually, there was a conversation on the listserv Adabiyot about that. There is this hermit who lives in a cave, and one king comes there and pays attention to him, and he gets invited to go to the royal feast, and he then comes back, and then the king comes back and he pays a lot of respect. And then one of the followers says, you know, you were much more indifferent to power before. So, you know, why are you paying so much respect? Why did you pay so much respect to him? And he talks about, and I'm afraid I don't remember all of the lines of it, but he says, you know, you can live without seeing a garden every day. You can live without smelling a flower every day, and go on. Even if you don't have a beloved one day, you can just sleep by yourself. But این شکمه بی هنر پیچ پیچ صبر ندارد که بسازد به هیچ. So, but this body of yours, this stomach needs food. And so in that way, what he's really saying is understand your limits, work with the limits that you have. You just need to have food. Now, does he say you have to sell your principles and not value them when you need food? No, but he says pretending that we just can overcome that doesn't make us do that. So I think it's a very important thing to remember. Plus the fact that even when he approaches the power structure, which mm-hmm. is often, he cannot avoid it.
Right.
I mean, he does as much as not having her own little khanqa built mm-hmm. for him by the support money sent from Baghdad, actually. So he's, you know, he does maintain independence, but he's a part of the power structure. And he cannot just say, okay, goodbye, I don't like that. But even when he speaks to them, clearly his task is to educate the rulers, particularly the younger ones. And, you know, and to tell them that, you know, بس بگردید و بگردد روزگار دل به دنیا در نبندد هوشیار. This is for Amir Ankianu, who's finally taken over, and the Salguris are over, and Ilkhanis and so on. And now grandson of Holaku has taken over. And he says, well, the world has turned forever and it will continue to turn. You're not going to be the only one sitting on the seat of power. And in fact, and he goes into the details of how vulnerable you are as a human being, and what is it that could give you a meaningful relationship with power. It's tremendously insightful, brave, and at the same time, unpretentious.
Yeah.
He's not on a pulpit. He's just standing next to the young king and saying, if you want to be successful and you want people not to be in serious agony and suffering, this is what you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like Saadi has his feet firmly planted on the ground. It's not that he's, you know, as you said, it's not that he's not mystical. It's not that he's not a serious lover. It's just that these other lovers got to eat too. But the difference seems to be for in Saadi, the lovers eat in his poetry. Whereas in other people, they leave that part out, you know, and the poems are just all tears and blood. But Saadi brings in the practicalities. Yes, Professor Zaga.
Just to add, I mean, it's really great that what Dr. Keshavarz is saying, this idea that Saadi is not on the pulpit, and it's related to his life. You know, when we imagine very often an ethicist, it's this ivory tower figure who's dealing with, let's say, ideals or imagining scenarios, but you can tell that he's lived this complex life in his ethics. Right. I mean, an example of that, there's a complexity to it. So an example of that, I was kind of blown away when I read this in the Golestan. He tells a story of this young boxer who decides he wants to head out for fame and fortune. So the father, the boxer's father, starts to tell him, you know, it's a big mistake. You can't just go out with nothing. You're going to end up poor. And at first, the father's right. And I think any ethicist would have developed the story for the father to be right. But the beauty of it is that by sheer luck, you know, this prince sees him. He ends up making a lot of wealth. And so it would seem like the boxer was right and the father was wrong. So the story sets up this complexity that life sometimes favors fools. It's not so easy as to tell someone, you know, this will always work, right? Or you will always fail. It's really a game of chances. and more like it's more likely that if you set out with nothing in your pockets, you'll fail. That's that kind of complexity you don't see in this tradition that he's often taking from. You know, there's this rich tradition of advice to kings and rich tradition of mm-hmm. ethical literature. In Saadi, it's much more nuanced, and there's this kind of you can tell there's this worldliness that he's seen the world enough to know about exceptions and situations. So it's really lovely.
Yeah, he's definitely a different kind of voice of ethics than Kant. You can tell Kant was just in little Königsberg. He didn't get out that much, whereas Saadi went everywhere from Africa to China and saw a lot. Yes, Professor Keshavas.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree with what Dr. Zaga was saying, and that part of the reason why this ethic is misunderstood, this ethics, is because people have taken it in a very literal sense. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. Like, he talks about غریبی گرد ماست پیش آورد دو پیمانا و بست و یک چمچه دوغ گر از بند لغوی شنیدی مرنج جهان دیده بسیار گوید دروغ. So he says, you know, if you hear a stranger offers you yogurt, you know, be careful, because part of it could be just watered, diluted buttermilk. And when you hear their stories, don't believe everything in it. But he is not saying it's good to lie. Mm-hmm. What he's saying is that your understanding of the situations you come across, have to develop in your life and have to be much more complex than just taking them at face value. Another example is the story when he's in India and supposedly king kills a Hindu, and, you know, because there is this person who has created this idol who raises its hand, but it actually is fraudulent, and, you know, we find all of that. You actually, first of all, the story has a lot of factual flaws. You can tell that he's not telling us that I'm giving you exact fact. And then at the end, he says to the king, what I learned from this story is that when I raise my hand to prayer, that it's not only me doing it, that the string is pulled from where the beloved is sitting. And also telling the king that when you make a decision, when you do things, beware of the fact that it is not only you in charge of everything that happens. Now, this part has escaped attention, unfortunately. And then people all talk about, oh, how could he do that? And, you know, this is the person who values others beyond almost any voice we can see in any literature. You know, you can have this guy who comes, the Daryo, your man barong mat kasi safar kardid hamung Daryo basi Arab di devo Turko tau jiko room zahar jens dar nafs pao kash ulum. So this person had traveled, he had learned from Arabs and Tajiks and Greeks. So they weren't the wild people. They weren't the infidels. They were also possessed knowledge. And this person had learned from them. So he's not a person who would say, okay, every Hindu I see deserves to be killed. He's putting together a story about a particular situation to reach that ending that he himself is not, should not consider himself the sole actor in every situation.
Right, right. Just because he has villains in his stories doesn't make him a villain. Yeah, wonderful. Well, thank you for this really rich context to Saadi's life. I feel like I'm getting to know him a lot better. So I want to move now from the man to the poetry. I wanted to ask if you could give us some examples of some of your favorite verses of Saadi's. I know he wrote lots of different kinds of poems, and some of his verses are quite celebrated, even, you know, outside of Iran and the Persianate world. I know, like, at the UN, they have one of his poems hung up there, based on a hadith. But Dr. Keshavas, why don't you start us out? What are some of your favorite verses of Saadi's, and why do you love them so much?
Okay, so again, let me just go. As you said, he has so many voices because he has tried all these different genres, which have different audiences and different rules of expression. I'm in love with his ghazals, although there's really nothing that I can be different to. So let me just read a part of a ghazal, and then I first read it in Persian, if it's okay, and then I'll give you the English translation. I translated this ghazal for a beloved student of mine who's no longer a student and is a scholar of Persian literature in his own right, Professor Matthew Miller. But I translated this for his wedding because it's about love. یکم شبی که در آغوش شاهد شکرم گرم چه عود برا و تشنهند غم نخورم ببند یک نفس ای آسمان دریچه صبح برا افتاب که امشب خوش است با قمرم ندانم این شب قدر است یا ستاره روز تویی برابر من یا خیال در نظرم بدین دو دیده که امشب تو را همی بینم دریغ باشد فردا که دیگری نگرم میان ما به جز این پیرهن نخواهد ماند مگر حجاب شود تا به دامنش بدرم Tonight that my sweetheart is holding me tight if they burn me like aloe wood I feel nothing But delight. Tonight, my moon and I are ecstatic being together. Tell the heavens to close its doors on sunlight. Tell the heavens to close their doors on sunlight. Has the star of dawn risen? Is this really you? Or are my eyes deceiving me? Perhaps this is the night of power. The luckiest and most blessed of nights. With these two eyes that are looking at you this very moment, tell me, how do I ever contemplate any other sight? Now there is nothing between us except this garment. If it keeps us apart, I will tear it open. With love's joyful might. And I rhymed it, although I thought I will make a fool of myself, but not I just could beautiful. Not go.
That was beautiful.
That's a really lovely translation. Wow. Wow. What a great wedding gift.
Yeah.
Asked him, I said, Matt, what do you want? And I thought he would say, you know, these multi-volume whatever. He said, Ghazal of Saadi that you translated. So I said, okay.
Yes, you trained him well. He's got great taste. That's wonderful. Wow. There's so much going on there. And like, so Saadi, you know, he's not inventing the Ghazal form, but it seems, you know, this is still pretty early in the Ghazal. And he's bringing it to a really like a peak of perfection here because it has the ambiguity. Obviously, it can easily be about a wedding night, about a night of union. You know, you want the night to last forever. You don't want the dawn to come. Love is going to rip through the garment of separation, all of this. But it has that ambiguity. You know, it could also be about a divine beloved. It could be using erotic imagery about a friend. It could be, it has that wonderful ambiguity that's productive of so many meanings that characterizes that tradition. That's just fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. Cyrus, do you have any favorite verses of Saadi's?
I picked a ghazal out too, a short ghazal. Karavani shakar az Misr be Shiraz ayad agar an yar safar karde ma baz ayad gu to baz ay ke gar khun manat dar khorde ast pishat ayam chu kabutar ke be parvaz ayad نام و ننگ و دل و دینگو برود این مقدار چیست تا در نظر عاشق جانباز آید من خود این سنگ به جان می طلبیدم همه عمر که این قفس بشکند و مرغ به پرواز آید اگر این داغ جگرسوز که بر جان من است بر دل کوه نهی سنگ به آواز آید. من همان روز که روی تو بدیدم گفتم هیچ شک نیست که از روی چنین ناز آید. هرچه در صورت عقل آید و در وهم و قیاس آن که محبوب من است از همه ممتاز آید. گر تو باز آیی و بر ناظر سعدی بروی هیچ غم نیست که منظور به اعزاز آید. To Shiraz from Cairo would come a caravan full of sugar if my traveling beloved would just find his way home. Say, come back, for if my blood is worthy of you, I'll be right by your side, like a dove taking flight. Reputation, disgrace, heart, religion, say, even if it all just disappeared, what does any of it matter to a lover willing to gamble everything? All my life, I'd been seeking with all my soul this stone to break open this cage so that the bird can take flight. If you were to take this heart-searing branding iron lodged within me and hold it to a mountain, the rocks themselves would cry out. That very day when I saw your face, I said, no doubt from a face like that will be flirtation. Anything that appears to the intellect, to one's fancy or analogical powers, what my beloved is outdoes them all. If you return and end up supervising Sa'di, there's no sorrow in that, for the intended one will have been venerated. I picked this poem because to me, what I was always left with from Sa'di is that he has this ability to use vernacular, almost sometimes even plain language, but in a way that he puts it together and you're amazed that it's so beautiful. It made me think back to, as I said, when I was an English major, Alexander Pope's comments about poetry and how as shades more sweetly recommend the light, so modest plainness sets off sprightly wit. He's taking this idea from Longinus, which is that the finest poetry is what uses everyday language, but in a way that others cannot or have not, to create right. something new. And you see that here. Also, I think I'd love to hear Dr. Keshavarz tell us more about this poem, because I just found it, you know, and to read. And I think there's something going on here politically. So it's a love poem, but there seems to be some political element to it, something very specific, which I can't figure out. Anyways, just as a love poem, you can see, I mean, the way that he... The way he goes from mountains to his heart to birds to, you know, it just, and that's the other thing, you know, is nature, the emphasis on nature in his poems. It's amazing.
No, that's really stunning. You know, we're getting a sense really now when Professor Keshavarz says Sa'di was first and foremost a lover. We're really seeing this on display in his ghazals really, really, really very clearly.
And I think I would like to touch on the point that Cyrus made about the simplicity of this language and the complexity of it at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know that there is a word in it about it in Persian literary tradition called sahle mumtane, something that is so simple that is impossible. You know, ay nafas khurram baad sabah az bar yar omade marhaba. There is not a word you can take out. Mm-hmm. There is not anything you can rearrange. And you feel that you just flow with it, yeah. You know? And I think, of course, by the time he has appeared on the scene, we've had Sana'i, we've had Attar, we've had these really eloquent voices. But I think he is an exception in that this is not so late in the ghazal, the shaping of the ghazal. So he's at the beginning, but he also has taken us to the most developed, the most, you know, formed version. And then nature, I think that, I mean, there's so much. You can just talk about him forever. But the nature, when he wants to tell us that he's always looking forward to anything new that appears on the horizon. How does he put it? هر گلی نو که در جهان آید ما به بویش هزار دستانی. Every new flower that comes in the world, I would sing for it. I will be its nightingale. You can say it's a new way of thinking that I will embrace. It would be a new way of writing poetry I would be happy to deal with, meeting new people, going to new places, simply changing things around, or just looking at the nature. And you know, when I started to write my monograph on Sa'di, you know, I just set up everything and I thought I'm just going to go find all these specific topics that he has talked about. And you know, it all ended up being about 20, 25 different things. I was almost like, Sheikh Ajal, you'll have to explain this to me. How did you do that? But what he does is that, in fact, he has all these familiar, accessible images and patterns, and they move together kaleidoscope. Let's not make an adverb, it becomes difficult. It just moves together like images in the kaleidoscope, and they come together, separate from each other, become new shapes, go back to the old one. And he's a master of that. He just loves playing with these things. And then the garden is also, I think it's very, very related to this. If you look at a tree, it has thousands of leaves. They are leaves. They're similar in color, in shape, in design. None of them are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And they come together and 100 trees the same again. So he sees this complexity and this play together better than anywhere in nature. And that's why I think then, and of course, there is a tradition of gazing at beauty and appreciating beauty. And so he's like, okay, this garden is the land of love. And your job is to gaze at it and find your meaning in it. And so he gives us the same kind of a garden in his own writings, particularly Ghazals, but almost everywhere.
Wonderful. Yeah. And his, you know, his most famous work, you know, is the entitled The Gulistan, the Rose Garden. So we've spoken about his Ghazals now, and he was clearly one of the masters of the Ghazal tradition. But he also wrote in a lot of other forms and genres as well, too. As you said, he had other voices there, too. Do you have any other verses you'd like to share from his Gulistan or quatrains or other things that you'd like to share with us?
If I may, I would like to just circle back a little bit to the Qasida that he wrote in praise of Amir and Keanu. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because it's so complex. And what he does with it is really fascinating. Now, to just, you know, just to also see what, you know, what praise poetry he kind of produces. So, بس بگردید و بگردد روزگار دل به دنیا در نبندد هوشیار ای که دستت میرسد کاری بکن پیش از آن کس تو نیاید هیچگاه. Much has the world turned and turn it will. The wise do not get attached to that which does not keep still. Do whatever you can when you are able to, before the age takes the strength from you. He's talking to the grandson of Holaku, okay? And then if we think that maybe he's not talking about kings and so on, no. He makes it very clear. این که در شهنامه ها آورده اند رستم و روئین تن اسفندیار تا بدانند این خداوندان ملک که از بسی خلق است دنیا یادگار. In the fables and books of kings, there are tales of Rostam, the immortal Esfandiar, and such is for the rulers and the owners of wealth to understand that the world was before them in other people's hands, those are gone, but blinded with greed, we do not seem to learn a lesson or take heed. Now, and then he really actually turns to the king. ایکی وقتی نطفه بودی بیخبر، وقت دیگر طفل بودی شیرخوار. I'm talking to you who were an oblivious cell, then grew into a suckling babe, and who could tell مدتی بالا گرفتی تا بلوغ سر بالایی شدی سیمین ازار همچنین تا مرد نام‌آور شدی فارس میدان صید و کارزار. And then you grew, you became a really grown, strong, beautiful individual and became also a famous warrior. آنچه دیدی برقرار خود نما وین چه بینی هم نماند برقرار. Whatever you saw didn't stay still, didn't stay the same, the rest will not too. دیر و زود این شکل و شخص نازنین خاک خواهد گشت و خاکش هم قبار. Very soon, all of you will turn into dust. And even the dust would be scattered into the wind. And then he goes on to say, now, how can you do, what can you do? You know, صورت زیبا یه ظاهر هیچ نیست. ای برادر سیرت زیبا بیار. And, you know, building palaces is not going to do things. Build palaces out of people's love and trust. And then at the end he says, look, people bring verses of praise. I bring prayer to you. I pray that you stay a loyal, ethical, kind, careful person. And that is the best gift I can give you. This is one face of him. And then at the same time, you have the funny stories in the Golestan doing the same thing. You know, what is his name? The Hajjaj, the ruler of Iraq, says, Hajjaj asked this saint, this mystic, pray for me. And the man looked up in the sky and said, Khodaya janash bestan, God, take his life. And he said, what kind of a prayer is this? He said, well, it's a prayer for your own good, because you will not be doing any worse things. And it's a prayer for the entire city, because they will be relieved of your cruelty. So you read it, you laugh, but at the same time, these are taught in schools and these are read by kings. And see how different is the tone, and at the same time is at the service of the goodness he wants to bring to the community around.
Yeah, it's the different, really, really different tones, different voices, but all kind of this, circling around the same messages. Sadi, he seems like a really cool uncle kind of figure, like a school you on some game here and then give you some wise advice there, and it's kind of... He's out for everybody's good, and he'll speak to different people and different audiences and in different ways. But no, thank you for that. That's amazing what he does, especially given I work a lot on Madih, Qasidas, you know, so it's a very different tone from what you see in a lot of the other ones. You know, he has the formal structure and all of that down, but the tone and what he's saying is very different from these Qasidas that are often praising kings in these hyperbolic, superlative, very different kinds of fashion. He's much more straightforward and kind of to the point. And yeah, I really feel like he's like a cool uncle taking the king aside. Let me give it to you straight, son.
And you know, let me just finish with one line. Yeah. At the end of the day, you've read all of this. He says, "Hana qabile man aleman din budand mara muallim ishq to sha'iri amukh." So at the end of the day, I'm a poet. Just leave me alone. You know, my family were all, you know, were who they were and taught, you know, religion. But mu'allama ishqito, your love taught me to be a poet. And it's again that laughter is there. That, you know, well, you be sure not to try to pin me down with any of these.
Right. I'm just a poet. Other people in my family are scholars and experts in this and that. You know, what do I know? I'm just the only thing love taught me is poetry. No, they're beautiful, and the translations are beautiful too. Thank you very much. Well, since you said, you know, the only thing love taught me is poetry, why did Sa'di write so much in poetry? What does Sa'di himself have to say about poetry and what poetry does and what poetry can do? I imagine some places he says some things about poetry. So, yeah, Professor Keshavarz, what does Sa'di have to teach us, or what does he say about poetry and what it does and what it can do?
I think he is very proud of actually being a poet that can get people to places he wants them to be. And he also sees apparel. See, he's always after beauty, whether it's in a garden or is in language. So, or the beloved, you know, that hadith man husn to nayaf zawiyat kas had hamina sukhandaniu zibawira. Nobody's going to add either to your beauty or to my poetry. This is the limit, the perfection. So he's clearly proud. Or sometimes he jokes about it. He says, "Natavanam ke degar sher nevisam ke magas zahmatam midehad az bas ke sukhan shirin ast." I can't write anymore. It's like honey, you know, the flies are around me trying to, you know, buzzing. I can't write anymore. So I think he's very proud of it. He does away, because he's so able with language, he does away with all those pomp and ceremony, and I see how I can handle language. None of that. He just speaks, and it's a miracle of simplicity and meaning. And so he doesn't need to do that. But it also, for him, he is endless. It's عشق را آغاز هست انجام نیست. مطربان رفتند صوفی در سماع عشق را آغاز هست انجام نیست. Everything the musicians play and then leave, but love has no beginning and no end. So this kind of endlessness, where love could be discovered in its limitlessness. At the same time, it's very interesting because love is this ontological. It wants you not to be. It's a way of not being that gives you the being that love gives you. So I think this is true of Rumi too, of many of these master poets. He does it with language. He's aware that he can do it, that you can, you know, I remember I was in Iran during one of the, you know, the Iran-Iraq war, and they would put some poetry on the radio so that when they were, you know, the, what do they call it? When they turned all the lights off and, you know.
Oh, the power cuts. And
yes, yes, so that you won't be seen. And then you could listen on the radio to poetry. Poetry came on, we forgot about bombings, you know? And my father would say, "Oh, no, this reading is not correct. He shouldn't be saying this, he should be saying that." So he was aware that what can give a taste of that limitlessness, that beauty, that attraction, that sweetness, that candidness, because love is candid, he's not joking with you. All of that he did with his poetry and very naturally. And I think he valued that. So در بارگاه خاطر سعدی خرام اگر خواهی ز پادشاه سخن داد شاعری. Come into the palace of my thinking and my writing and my poetry, and then you will see what I mean. So it was an invitation, open invitation, which probably the simplicity that Cyrus referred to makes that door easy to open. So it was an invitation to tasting all that limitlessness.
That's so beautifully put. Yeah, that impossibly easy nature of his style that makes things so profound, and yeah, it gives you so much while also taking stuff away, deconstructing, taking apart things at the same time is amazing. Professor Zaga, what about you? What do you think Sa'di has to say about poetry and what's special about it? What he can, I mean, he was a master of prose as well, and his prose was very poetic.
To answer that, I wanted to sort of just keep I want to continue the line of reasoning that Dr. Keshavarz was doing. I want to continue that thought. I think there's something implicit in Saadi's style about poetry, which is that, you know, poetry is, it's the able poet can make in someone else's psyche, in someone else's soul, whatever you want to call it, can bring something to realization that they want. It's not an accident. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen by accident. It happens by design. And Saadi is like this great composer in that the style of the poem in question so mirrors the meaning, the thematic, what he wants to convey thematically, that it just, it has that effect right when it's read. That's the really interesting thing about poetry that's going on with Saadi, is that it, like a great song, it's able immediately, without you even, you know, let's say like in my case, when I was first studying Persian poetry, and I didn't even understand all the words, but still the sound of it, the structure, something about it is conveyed. And then it helps, by the way, and, you know, it clarifies the meaning of the poem too. You know, the style and content are so wedded together. And that's not true for all great poets or all poets in the same degree, to the same degree that it is for Saadi.
No, in that regard, exactly. He has a line. After I don't know how many decades, I'm still amazed at it. Be pay khishtan ayand aashiqan be kamandat ke har ke ra to begiri z khishtan berahani. So people come to you willingly. Why? Because whoever becomes your captive, you free them from themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's this process that Dr. Zagar was talking about. It, you go there. It's just so attractive. It pulls you in there. And then when you're there, you begin to work on whatever it is that, you know, at that moment Saadi is talking about. But it's a kind of freeing you from sides of yourself that you may not even be aware of.
Wow. That's really beautifully put. Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's kind of like a magic spell of sorts.
But that's why it was called Sehr-e Halal.
Yeah.
It was viewed as that. I mean, sometimes I have to laugh out loud when people say, oh, Persian speakers had a very highly developed poetry, but no literary criticism. Well, there was a lot of understanding of poetry in not exactly the same, you know, generic forms that we use now. But one of them was to understand the magic, this magic of poetry.
No, I think E.G. Brown actually had a line in his Literary History of Persia that the literary criticism increases with cultures or societies' inability to compose and understand poetry. Now, because you need more explanation, right? If you just get it, you don't need the sheet music. You need more and more criticism. The less well you're able to compose and understand poetry, then you need more of this stuff. And so he's like, yeah.
And there was a lot of give and take. Poetry was said.
Right.
Was recited, even Sher Goftan. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that criticism and, you know, analysis and give and take happened as people read these to each other in circles. And
right.
Yeah, it happened orally. And thank you so much. We've touched on this a little bit, but to close up, I want to know a little bit more about Saadi's contemporary life and legacy. I mean, Professor Keshavarz, you already shared with us all these wonderful details from your life and the role Saadi played within it. But, I mean, do people sing Saadi today? Are people still reading him in schools, in high schools? Are his poems performed at Sufi concerts? Or what's the contemporary life of Saadi's poetry?
Yeah, Saadi in early 20th century, Saadi has always had lovers of his poetry and readers and those who used the books in the school and so on. There's really, that hasn't been that interrupted. But in the 20th century, particularly the first half and back up to the middle, at least in Iran, there is a misunderstanding of Saadi as the one who, you know, for example, the master contemporary poet who passed in 2000, Ahmad Shamlu, he presents a very critical view of Saadi. What does he have to teach me? His ethics, his praise of the kings, his praise of homosexuality, all of these are concerns of his generation. You know, and that actually amazes me, because to me, Shamlo is a poet who understands poetry, and I wish he would read Sandy and we would be freed of that. But there is that period. But then that begins to change by the almost like late 20th century, when people are beginning to say, oh no, look at his attention to, you know, humanism and the value of knowing others and considering the whole humanity limbs on the same body and things like that. And most of this change, by the way, happens among the critics and the scholars, not poetry readers. Yeah. Poetry readers, my opinion, as far as I can tell, never stop loving Sa'di's poetry because it has so many different formats. It could be memorized in short parts. It could be taught in classroom and all that. So I think he continues to be a very popular poet with Persian speakers across, not just within what geographically is Iran today, but, you know, the Persianate world. There is a lot of Sa'di reading continues all the way through.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of South Asian friends whose grandparents and great-grandparents, you know, grew up. And that's what they were taught, Sa'di, until the British kind of tried to replace Persian with English in South Asia. And there's still lots of Sa'di fans in South Asia as well, too, I think, due to that legacy. Professor Zargar, anything to add about Sa'di's contemporary legacy in life?
Yeah, just a few very small things that we didn't have a chance to talk about in terms of his legacy. One important one, of course, is that wherever Hafez lives, so too Sa'di, yeah. Because Hafez was so heavily influenced by Sa'di, you know, would take his lines and improve on them or quote them or build a ghazal based on a Sa'dian ghazal. Another small point is about a common speech. So in Persian, there's a phrase, durugh maslahati, comes from durugh-i maslahat-amiz, from the Golestan, which has been really actually misunderstood and mistranslated as an advantageous lie, or I'm trying to think how they read it incorrectly, sort of a useful lie. But actually, in the context of Sa'di, it's a lie that makes peace between people and creates love and healing is better than a truth that creates hatred and death. But anyways, so, you know, he's very much still alive in that way. And one other very small one was, I've noticed that when the birthday of the Prophet Muhammad comes around, yes, Arabic speakers will quote lines, and these lines of Sa'di, and I had pointed out to a friend of mine who's from Iraq, I pointed out, I said, you know, that's Sa'di, so he wouldn't believe me. And the lines are, بلغ العلا بكماله كشف الدجى بجماله حسنت جميع خساله صلوا عليه وآله. He reached the heights through his perfection. This is referring to the Prophet Muhammad. He reached the heights through his perfection. He lifted the gloom of darkness through his beauty. Completely virtuous are all of his character traits. Bless him and bless his family. So this is very common in the birthday of the Prophet Muhammad for people to recite these lines all around the world.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's one where Sa'di has gone far beyond just the boundaries of Persian. And another one, which we keep mentioning throughout the podcast, but I'd like to, if Dr. Keshavarz wouldn't mind, I would like for, if you wouldn't mind, for you to talk about it, I'd like for you to talk about it just for a minute, the debates that are on a rug that's, and the human rights, some human rights thing in the UN in the building in New York that are Sa'di's. I was hoping you could just briefly comment on that, because we've touched on it, but I think many of the listeners might not actually.
Yeah, the Bani Adam.
Bani Adam.
Yes, I have it here. I can actually. The Persian of it is Bani Adam Azal Yek Pekarand. And some people read it Yek Digarand, but I'm for the version Yek Pekar because it's one body. Bani Adam Azal Yek Pekarand, Kedar O Farinesh, the Yek Goharand, to Ozvi Bedardo, Varat Ruz Gor, Degar Oz, Hora, Namonet Karov. تو که از مهنت دیگران بیغمی نشاید که نامت نهند آدمی. Human beings are all limbs on one body, for they were created from the same essence. When one limb is suffering from pain, no other part can rest. If you are indifferent to the pain of others, you do not belong to the human family. Yeah, it's a very, he does, you know, allude to things. And then he gets to a point where he actually says it quite openly for everybody to know and to remember. These verses, I mean, it's very interesting when I think about this, the verses of Sa'di and Ferdowsi both were all over our textbooks in the elementary school. And, you know, Taban Abubat, Harkedan Abubat from Ferdowsi, those who know are strong, or Bani Adam Azayek Pekaran. This is kind of ingrained when you, in that early age, you see that. But at the same time, it's very simple. Bani Adam Azayek Pekaran. You know, they belong, their limbs on the same body. So you can, the fact that you can read that language and understand it, I think it's made it also very important. But it is so much that he says is iconic and has become proverbs and have stayed in language. And as you said, that your friend didn't realize that poem was from Sa'di. A lot of things people say, they say, and then, you know, they might not even realize that this is the word of Sa'di they're repeating.
Yeah, and can you think of a message more needed today, more relevant today when, I mean, studies are showing there's this rise in narcissistic traits and isolation through social media, than this, that if you don't care for the well-being of other human beings, then are you really a human being? It's such a timeless message, I think. And you see that care, as Dr. Keshavarz said, you see it all throughout Sa'di's writings, that element of caring about other people that I think is the really take-home message of his legacy.
Yeah, and that's not an ornament for you to be proud of. It's a part of your humanity. If you don't have it, you're missing something seriously important. So he's very clear about that. And as you were talking, Cyrus, the loneliness and isolation of social media, I do see poetry really as the opposite of that. You know, just imagine how many, it's a hallway millions of people have walked through. And when you live in a culture when it resonates, there are ways of you feeling connected to others that are not even consciously on the kind of understood, or even you may not be even aware of, but you are connected with others. And I think poetry right now, it's absolutely crucial. And I do this, you know, whether through the podcast or whether through when speaking with young people, they would really love it. They love it. They respond to it. And it's just that they have to find it out. It has to be somewhere where they can access it. And it overcomes that kind of isolation and loneliness. Mm.
Well, thank you so much for making accessible the beauties of the timeless beauties of Sa'di's poetry, which being timeless is always timely. I mean, as we were talking, I kept thinking, I wish, you know, our current politicians and billionaire class around the world had grown up studying the Golestan with good teachers. Who knows, things might have been a little different. But I want to thank you so much, Professor Keshavarz, Professor Zargar, for this lovely tour through Sa'di's many-colored garden of his verses and of his life and of his really profound messages. And I hope that you listeners enjoyed it as well, too, and that you'll join us next time on the next episode of The Logic of the Birds.